up, Energy fam? This is Justin, and welcome back to another episode of Wicked Energy with JG. My goal with each episode is to deconstruct the minds of today's energy thought leaders to uncover their framework and tools used in their journeys of providing energy to the world. So sit back, relax, and remember that everything you see around you requires some form of energy. Welcome back to this week's episode. I'm here at the Houston Cannon with Laura Stadler, Chief Commercial Officer and Head of ESG at Frio Valley Infrastructure. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're most welcome. I feel like we should have hit record like 20 minutes ago because we've had some solid conversation leading up to this point. But you said it got the juices flowing. So hopefully now you're in the zone, ready. We got some water. And yeah, you took notes. I mean, hopefully you're not reading off your notes because this is not, you know, you're not doing a presentation here. We're just having a conversation.
That's right.
Yeah. So cool. Well, I'm glad we decided to do it in person. You know, you said you're all about doing things in person and with a real handshake. So you're happy that, you know, this whole work from home thing and being virtual is over with or what?
Absolutely. I've got two sons that are 12 and 7 and they keep me very busy. And I loved all the Nerf wars and everything during COVID, but I do really need to focus on work, which is why I take notes to make sure that my mind's focused and not in mom mode or work mode or wherever it is.
Hey, look, I get it. When I was working from home, it was like, I liked it. You know, there was definitely some silver lining around it, but going from work mode to dad mode or work mode to husband mode within like 30 steps to my kitchen from my office, I didn't realize that I really need that time to switch and decompress. And, you know, whether it's a drive home from the office or from a meeting to go home, I do need that time. Cause yeah, it takes a minute to like unwind and just, like I said, decompress. And so, you know, there's still people that do work from home and who have their kids there with them. And that's a challenge.
It is. But I think the flexibility of how work has changed, being able to do Teams meetings, even when you're at work, someone else can't make it or in, you know, states in between.
Yeah.
Is huge. So that's been really nice. But I'm a big supporter of a handshake.
Yeah.
It changes everything in a dynamic with a relationship.
No, it does. And actually, it's interesting because, you know, growing up, that was one of the first things I remember my dad like firmly teaching me is like how to give a proper handshake.
Same.
It's still to this day, if I shake someone's hand that either they come in at an odd angle or it's soft or
fishy.
Yeah. It like, is there something like, I hear my dad, you know, on my shoulder being like, that's a reshake the hand. You know what I mean? And it's like,
look him in the eye.
Yeah. No, totally. And you know, because I remember my dad, when we would almost do anything and whether it was, you know, we went to the like the auto body shop or like anytime someone did a service or like there was some form of business being done, there was always a handshake. You know, I did it for a lot of years growing up and I still to this day, like if there's an opportunity to give a handshake as a gesture of respect or a thank you, I try and do it. I feel like it's few and far between. And even at our office, there was, you know, just due to, I guess, COVID policy or whatever it is, you know, they were introducing new hires and, you know, of course I was excited to shake hand and it was, oh, we're not shaking hands. And I was like, but everyone's what? Okay.
Elbows.
Yeah. Right. And so I guess it's still, there's still some concern with that, but anyway, no, I'm glad we did it in person. Here we are and we're here at the Cannon. And before we get going, I do want to give a big thanks to the Cannon West Houston. It's located in the Energy Corridor. The Cannon is a fantastic co-working space with multiple locations throughout Houston, whose mission is to create, grow, and evolve the world's most effective and valued entrepreneurial community. Visit thecannon.com for more details. And also something else I wanted to share with the audience is I want to remind the listeners that I'm currently opening up sponsorship opportunities for the podcast. If any energy-focused companies are looking to increase their brand marketing initiatives, their visibility, or just creating awareness around their company's initiatives through my podcast, please reach out to me. I would love to work for you or with you and for you if you're a sponsor. But anyway, Laura, so how's your summer been? We're here. It's towards the end of August. Are the boys back in school or what?
They're back in school. We moved during the summer. It's been a crazy summer, very crazy summer.
Okay.
Lots of traveling and moved into this new house. They started new schools last week and they're loving it. Thank goodness.
Awesome. So, which part of town?
We are west side of Houston now. I was north up in Magnolia, and now I'm in around the Fulcher, Katy area.
Oh, yes. My family, we're in Katy. And
oh,
so,
great.
Yeah. Yeah. We might stumble into each other at the grocery store.
Yes. That seems to be a popular spot.
Yeah. Nice. No, Fulcher's, we're not quite as west of Fulcher. If you're, you know, say Katy Mills Mall, we're about a mile and a half south of that.
Okay.
So,
Yeah. We're in Cross Creek.
So. Yeah, I know exactly where that's at. So, well, cool. Welcome to the West Side and suburbia land.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, we don't have to get too into the weeds, but, you know, the boys started a new school. How was that? I mean, good transition?
Great.
Yeah?
Very great. They were really nervous. They kept their heads high. I moved good. A lot as a kid.
Okay.
Lived in 9 states. Mm. And for me, it's almost exciting for something new, and I hope to rub that off on them.
Yeah.
And they came back home. I got off the buses. There weren't any tears. They had their heads held high. So
sweet.
They're excited. They've made some friends. They had kids over yesterday. So my house is already full of kids, which
there you great. Go. So they seem like they're good at making friends.
Yeah.
That's perfect. And so you said you grew up and you lived in 9 different states?
Yes.
So what's the reason behind that?
So a lot of people want to say that I was military or something, but my dad was in health insurance, and liability and risk and all of that. And so he helped really dive into these different companies. And I was just at the prime of his career where they wanted him in all different places. And then moved to Texas for college and got into the oil field with my ex-husband. And we bounced around a little bit there.
Yeah.
And no matter what, energy brings you back to Houston.
It does. It ultimately, it's like a magnet. You know what I mean? It's like you've probably worked here at some point in your career, but ultimately somehow people always end up back here, which, yeah, I was at Pittsburgh, Denver, and now Houston. And I don't see, you know, unless I got a crazy opportunity to go back to Canada, but I mean, I like it here and there's just so much opportunity.
Oh my gosh. And I lived in Pittsburgh and Denver as well.
So, yeah.
But no matter what, the decision makers are here.
Yeah, no, totally. I like being, you know, as close to the tippy top as possible. For sure. Yeah. So what was the highlight of your summer? I mean, anything crazy? Like you said, well, you moved, so that was a big deal. But anything exciting or fun? Or
I got to take my kids to Disney. And that was
sweet. Which one?
I took my little one to Disney World.
Okay.
And then I got to take them both to California to Disneyland.
Oh, nice.
So that was really fun.
Okay, so like describe the difference here. Which one did they like better?
You know, Disney World was a whole, you really can't compare them in a way because they're so different.
Okay.
But Disneyland was a great, you know, we did it in one day.
Disneyland.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
You can see
yeah.
It in you one can... day. They get a couple rides. They're exhausted. You go back to the beach. It's great.
Yeah. Sweet. So we actually last spring took our family, my wife and our kids, we went to Disneyland in California. I went to grad school with a good friend of mine who lives in Los Angeles. And so he basically was our tour guide.
Oh, cool.
Which was awesome because we'd never been there. And then he's like, well, you need this app and you need this and you need that. And so we were so efficient. It was awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah. So we took them there and California was a blast. But I've heard, like you were saying, Disney World, Disneyland, Disney World's like 20 times the size and it's just insane. And
really insane.
But like the OG Disney stuff is like the Disney that I grew up watching. Mm-hmm. A lot of that still exists in Disneyland,
which
for me was cool. But my kids are like, what the hell is this?
Kids are too. They're like, this is weird.
Right. Yeah.
Why is there an elephant that can fly?
Yeah. Yeah. Dumbo who?
They didn't really know Mickey Mouse very well. This is bad.
No, I mean, but that's so true. And, you know, as Disney's evolved, it's got now just countless characters and movies and everything else. But yeah, as a kid growing up, there was a lot of the nostalgia that I got to experience the Disneyland.
So Disney World doesn't have all the Avengers stuff.
Okay.
So Disneyland does.
Right.
And so I felt like a kid there because that's my kids and I have watched that since my oldest was little.
Yeah.
And they did a great job of that.
Yeah. Disneyland. No, that part of it was super cool. My daughter was extremely bummed out because she thought she was going to get to go see the Frozen Castle and that wasn't there. And so talk about bursting her bubble. I was just like, oh my God. And I was like, well, surely Elsa's around here somewhere. And she was not. So my daughter, and she's like, Daddy, did you take us to the wrong Disneyland? And I was like, no, maybe she's sleeping. I don't know. She moved her house.
She's
like,
college.
Yeah, maybe she's got a place in Orlando. That's where we'll go next. Yeah, so I kind of, but I mean, again, with all the other stuff that was happening, it was, you know, it was exciting times. But anyway, well, that's good to hear. Sounds like you had a wonderful summer. You know, I like to, you know, so now we got a little bit to know a little bit about you, but there's always a question I like to kick things off with, which will really just kind of unlock, you know, or peel back the onion, if you will. But if you had an ideal Friday night, what would that look like? Assuming you had all the money in the world, you could teleport anywheres, what would you do and who would you spend it with?
Oh, wow. That's an interesting question. If it was a Friday night, I could do anything. I'd probably take my kids to go hiking. I take them hiking.
Okay.
Back in Denver. Or back in Denver. Actually, if I could go anywhere in the world, I'd take a jet over to probably Austria.
Wow.
That would be awesome. Okay. Switzerland.
So you're an outdoors lady.
Absolutely. I love being outside.
Yeah.
Most times if you can't find me, especially if I'm supposed to be at my office, I'm probably just walking outside.
Okay. So have you always been like that?
Yes, absolutely.
Really?
Since I was a little girl. I'm always outside. I was the barefoot kid in the woods trying to create some kind of fort.
Yeah. Something. No way. Okay. And so what about hiking do you enjoy? Is it just like the exploration, the views, the random flowers you see on the trail? Like what about hiking? Because I mean, that's
exploration, the adventure okay. behind it, getting yeah. to see what's around the corner, and you never know what you're going to see out there. The wildlife to some of the views that you can't, everybody wants to see something on National Geographic and they can bypass the travel.
Yeah.
But being there and getting to see it and feel it and smell it is a whole different experience.
Yeah.
And I always view life as my grandfather used to always talk about how to enjoy challenges and to climb those mountains.
Yeah.
But no matter what, there's always another mountain to climb because the, you know, world's round, you got to keep
yeah.
moving.
Yeah.
And so it's just a good reminder of what you can conquer as being yourself and in this world, and then taking that back to business of, all right, grounded, let's go. No problems.
Wow. So it's deeper than just going on a hike and seeing the view. It's, yeah, no, there's like some intrinsic satisfaction there for going out and into the nature and experience that. I actually got back from Colorado. A good friend of mine who's a drilling engineer works. His father-in-law has a place in Frisco, Colorado. And so we went and stayed there and got to do some hiking. And awesome. Yeah, it was a blast. We did 2 years ago, we went and he took me on a 14er. I had never hiked before in my life. I'd like walked trails, but not like formal hiking. Went from Houston to Denver, Denver to Frisco, all within whether, I don't know, it was like 8 or 9 hours. Got highly intoxicated, which was a bad idea. The night before, woke up, went and then hiked a 14er, and I've never been so sick in my life. I survived. I got to the top, took some selfies to prove that it actually happened. Uh-huh. In a blizzard, might I add.
Wow.
In the middle of summer, it was insane. And then I started getting really bad altitude sickness on the way down. I powered through it, got down. And then as we were driving back to the condo, like it felt like I got hit by a train. And then, yeah, I got back to the place. Yeah, just like it was bad. And then, you know, I kind of overcame that and back to partying. So it was good. Yeah. But good. This time we didn't do a 14er. We did a couple hikes that were like maybe a couple hours, but beautiful views. I mean, I told him, I was like, man, we didn't have to hike 7 hours. Like the same view that, you know, like we got this time only took us 2 hours. So 14er, we can leave that alone. I like this 2 hour hike thing. This is way it's more refreshing. Up my alley. Yeah. Yeah.
It's really refreshing. And 2 hours that's definitely doable advice.
Oh yeah. No, it was 14er, easy.
14er, sometimes you're like, I got to train for that.
Right. And if I wouldn't, and again, you know, I was just, I don't know, maybe it's just like the ignorance. He was like, yeah, you know, we got to acclimate this and that. And I'm like, no, let's just go and we'll do it. And of course I was like, if I drink, it's fine. I'll just make sure I hydrate before we go. And so that was a bad idea.
Continued to drink.
Yeah. We brought, so, you know, it was one of those where, when we get to the top, we'll drink a beer. And it was just like the wind was blowing and it was snowing. And like, I'm not about to drink anything. Let's get back down so we can, you know, do this back at the chalet. So anyway, I do like hiking and it is beautiful. Colorado has amazing trails and just so much to see and do. And yeah, I lived in Denver for a little bit. So it's definitely got a place in my heart as well. Like growing up, did you live in areas where you could go hiking?
So I lived in and around Denver, just in Castle Rock, Castle Pines area for a while. Okay. And that was where I really got to dive into the hiking world. And then on top of that, I stayed in Utah for a little bit of time and did some hiking. And then my brothers and my sister, we always like to get out there and go hiking. And we all like sports. We're all athletic. And we just kind of get out there and want to go do something. And I'm an adrenaline junkie in a way.
Okay.
So, you know, flying helicopters, airplanes.
What?
You name it. I love to do something that's not sitting at a desk.
Wow. It sounds like it. What's like the most crazy thing you've done?
Probably aerobatics for flying. So I've worked at a small airport in Minnesota.
Okay.
And I was the desk manager and then I became a lineman because I was so interested. I'm a very curious person. A lot of people can definitely attest to that.
Okay.
And asking all the different questions to the different pilots, and they got to the point where they were showing me the engines and opening up the planes and getting me in the hangars to see how things are taken apart and put back in.
Wow.
And then on there, I started working towards really being able to let me fly. And on their time off, or if they had a cancellation for a student, they'd take me up there. And the first ones were teaching me how to fly airplanes, and I got really bored. Because really, when you're sitting in a cockpit for hours, it's the most exciting part is taking off and landing. You don't do anything in between.
Right.
So then they started teaching me that you could do aerobatics, so barrel rolls and hammerheads and all that. It was so much fun.
So you got to do that?
Yes.
What?
Yes. Got it all logged and everything.
So you were sitting, or you were actually like
I was
doing it?
So I was a pilot. Yeah.
What?
I didn't get my license. I was in high school. And when I went for college.
Even then.
I was like, oh, never be actually a
pilot. So you were controlling the plane, doing barrel rolls and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. That's insane.
The hammerheads are the best. That's where you go straight up and you let you kill it and then you fall back. And then
it comes back on. What?
And it is God, so awesome.
I'm getting butterflies just thinking about
it's incredible. Oh, I don't know if my stomach can handle it like it did in high school, but I would definitely do it again.
Laura, that is so badass. Holy smokes. Wow. So do you like roller coasters and shit then too?
I do.
Yeah, for
sure.
And
my sons don't.
Really? I love roller coasters. When we were in Disneyland, I wanted to, like the last night we were there, you know, everyone was tired and wanting to shut it down. Uh-huh. And I was just like, no, we got to keep going.
Right, it's open till midnight. Let's go. We got to work.
Right. Yeah. No, I wanted to keep going. And everyone's like, oh, I'm tired. And so like the kid, like just like the child in me was just like, I wanted to play so bad.
Right. You wanted to stomp your foot and be like, but come on.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We did get into one that my sons, I made a deal. I said, we won't do anything that goes upside down. Like,
okay.
Trust me on that. And then we went on Guardians of the Galaxy.
Is that the one that does the, you're sitting there and it goes up and down and up? Oh, I went
it's
on that.
It's Tower of Terror, but they
That's
upgraded it.
Yes, and I went on that.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea what we were walking into. It was a blonde moment, I guess, because I didn't see the tower thinking, because everyone was like, yeah, it's a great roller coaster. You should go on it. So I thought it was a roller coaster. It was not. The first thing that happens is you drop like 20 floors is what it feels like. But they've got the best music going and the raccoon dude, whatever his name is going. It was awesome. But my kids were like, oh my gosh.
Nice.
It was the highlight though.
So that was my favorite ride. And my daughter, my son was too small, but my daughter was hit the height requirement. Oh, wow. And when we got up there into like, cause it's kind of like creepy and like all this, you know what I mean? Like it's this.
Creepy warehouse.
Yeah. And so for her, like she had never experienced that. And I don't think she'd seen the movie. And so she was terrified. So right before we got in, I mean, she just like broke down crying and it's just like, I'm scared. So she freaked out. So like, damn it. So then like, I like waved someone. I'm like, hey, like my daughter, like, and we were with another family. And so they took my daughter down.
You're nice.
Yeah. And so then, anyway, yeah, there was someone else who had like escorted my daughter and someone we were with went down with her. And then, so like I got to do it and I was like, yes.
That's nice. Like, you still went.
No. So I did. And along with my buddy's wife and her son or their son. And so, that was a blast. But
that's awesome.
Yeah. The up and down. And
then they open the window up top and you're like, wait, is that real?
Right. Because the screen looks so real as you're looking out. Yeah.
It's so cool.
I love that ride. Yeah.
I don't know if you got into the Star Wars stuff. My son's.
We didn't have time.
We were able to get in. I finagled them into the droid depot and the lightsaber thingamajigger.
Okay.
And they did a great job of doing that. Even if you don't like Star Wars, it was really cool.
Sweet.
And we had this little droid thing. Okay. And we get in this ride, right? And when you drop, the droid flew up. I thought it was my son's head at first. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But so the gravity, whole time I was like playing basketball with the droid.
What? That is so cool. Yeah, we didn't. Like, that's a thing. Like we were there. We spent 2 days at the parks, and we didn't see everything we wanted to. So
I can't.
Yeah, it's like you got to go from sun up to sundown and then some to really get it all in. But
militant.
Yeah. Anyway, this is a podcast not about Disneyland and Disney World. Believe it or not, but you know, I was going to pivot into your career stuff, but I did notice you have a Red M sticker on your iPad. And you've been quite involved with Red M, and I would love for you to share what that is and, you know, kind of the reason you support it. And I think it'd be good to spread some awareness about it.
So Red M is something that I've had a big heart for a long time, not Red M, but what they do.
Okay.
And it's spreading awareness about human trafficking. And so my sister she was overseas for a while as a missionary helping those in human trafficking and sex trafficking. So I learned quite a bit about it.
Wow.
And I've had some experiences in my life that has gotten me very passionate about helping women that have been through traumatic experiences get out of it. And wow, to understand that they can do more and they can get through it and they can forgive and move on. And so I haven't been involved as much as I wish I could be, but with Red M, I got involved. I met David Reed about 2.5 years ago, I think it was. And we started talking about it. And I was excited that he was open to letting me join and help out, with, especially on the oil and gas side.
Yeah.
Because a lot of oil and gas, there's a lot of assumptions as well, and a lot that happens in oil and gas with human trafficking. And so that was really interesting to kind of get involved there, but really helping spread awareness as a professional is what Red M allows you to do. Okay. And it's not that they're going to demand you to go and save these women or boys, you know, at the actual spot, but you can spread the awareness to the community, to other professionals, to get them to understand, to spread the awareness into the communities. And it gives you a good balance between what you, you know, as much as I'd love to go be like a Navy SEAL and save these people, mm-hmm. you can't do it. You can't do it all. Yeah. But to raise that awareness and bring in, whether it's, you know, what are you really good at? Let's say it might be, you say, I'm not good at anything, but I have a really awesome, huge printer that I could print as many pages as you want. You know, let me know what you need. We'll print it out for you.
Yeah.
That would be amazing. So that's what you sign up for. Okay. Or maybe it's you're a brilliant photographer, or you're great at doing podcasting, which I know this network helps us a lot with Red M. That's the niche there, is that we can really, we're not going to demand your life. We're not going to demand that you give money. It's what are you good at? Maybe you do have a ton of money.
Yeah.
And you can spare some. So it gives everybody a good chance to get involved in something that's much bigger than themselves.
Yeah. No, I commend you. And then David Reed has just been like poured a bunch of time and effort into it.
He's incredible.
Yeah, he has. And OGGN, who, you know, I was a former podcast host for them. Mark LaCour is big, a supporter of Red M as well. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks that, you know, I know professionally support the Red M movement.
Good.
And so, yeah, it's great. And if anyone's interested, I'll make sure and put the link in the show notes. If anyone wants to volunteer, because I know you guys do events and there's just always opportunity for people to get involved if that's something that they are passionate about. Or, yeah, if you can, just do a selfless deed and support them and help them out if they can.
My big thing with Red M, my goal is that I'm tying it to ESG.
Okay.
And that's something where companies are still struggling to figure out how do you fit into ESG. And ESG is also the greatest opportunity for us to truly make an impact in local communities through business development of projects, right? So right now, typically before all this stuff, before energy and transition got so big as it is today, and just traditional oil and gas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or companies. They do a project, they send $1 million of a check to Ronald McDonald House or something. Maybe it's a big cancer foundation or Red Cross, whatever it is. And they can write it off and they're done. They can market it and everything. ESG is holding people accountable for, you know, how are you actually getting involved in the community? How are you actually making an impact? What are you going to do? Are you like, how do you prove that metric? What are the different standards, et cetera, right? So what I'd like to do is at the investment level is that if you can put, if it's 1%, if it's 0.1% of the project, so let's say for every mile of pipe, 0.1% of it goes towards a local community to spread awareness about human trafficking. Mm. Maybe it's at the wellhead. Maybe it's that for every P&A project, you know, X amount goes towards that community.
Yeah.
Or it's somehow spreading that awareness, but you can track it and you can prove that you're making that impact.
Wow. Good for you. I mean, you've been involved with a lot of different things. I mean, it sounds like you've kind of have a vision of the direction that you'd like for it to go. And yeah, I applaud you and commend you for doing that. I think it's amazing. I mean, you know, fortunately, but you know, perhaps maybe unfortunately, I've never really been exposed to, you know, human trafficking, and maybe I was, and I wasn't aware of it.
That
could be, you know, something. And especially here in Houston, it's, if I remember correctly, I think it's like one of the biggest places for human trafficking, which is sad, is it's terrible. But, you know, again, I think anyone out there who's ever, you know, if you're interested in that topic, either reach out to Laura or, you know, go on Red M's website and sign up to volunteer or contribute or whatever you can. You know, again, there's just sometimes we're so, you know, we take things for granted, and you and I sitting here and, you know, we're safe. We're going to go home to our families tonight and sleep tight and everything's good. But the reality is we're few and far between. And there's a lot of people out there suffering in so many different ways.
And it's not talked about, and people don't realize how close it is to home. It's like the Woodlands is one of the biggest targets.
Really?
Because
so why is that? Like, what's...
Well, you've got all these, I shouldn't say entitled, but a lot of children these days are so isolated with technology.
Okay.
And you find somebody that, you know, they groom some of these kids for 2 years. And then they get them to a point where they even know the family.
When you say, sorry, so help me understand a bit. You say groom them. What do you mean? Like
grooming? They groom them, meaning...
And who's they?
They, the traffickers.
Okay, so they groom kids?
Oh, absolutely.
And like local kids or kids?
Yes.
Okay.
And so what they'll do for, I'll give one example. A young girl, 12, 13 years old. She's on some chat. Somebody picks it up and starts talking to her. Maybe they meet at the mall even and continue to chat.
Oh,
and okay. They end up gaining their trust, and they end up creating this emotional bond, as well as, you know, this is
okay.
My boyfriend. This is, you know, I love him and he looks my age, or he's a little older, but they gain that trust. And then they might do something where they might rape them, or mm-hmm. they might, you know, kill the dog on the front porch or something. And they're threatening them, saying, you're not going to leave me, or you're going to do what I ask.
Okay.
And a lot of them just want pictures of some of the things, and I won't go into too much detail, but
sure. But I mean, I'm sure everyone can use their unfortunate imagination to where this can lead to.
It's unfortunate. And a lot of the girls, some of them don't even realize that they were trafficked. Some of the so-called boyfriends, they leave after they get all the pictures, and then 2 years later, they see themselves on the internet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then see, that's interesting, because right away, my mind, when you say human trafficking, is like
brutal.
Right. Or like even something, you know, where I guess it could be defined in so many different ways, and
absolutely.
There's probably different levels and categories. Like, it's probably very complex. I didn't really think of it in the sense that you're talking, but I could see that in being, you know, let's say in the Woodlands or any of these suburbs where you are somewhat isolated and somewhat vulnerable. And I mean, from my observation, a lot of the, you know, kids in the area that I am currently living in lack street smarts. Like, they're so oblivious. Yeah. And so very vulnerable, gullible, and soft. Yeah. And again, I'm making very general statements here. And, you know, to anyone out there who has kids in those areas, like, my kids live in that area, so I'm aware of it. And, you know, it's something that my wife and I talk about. It's like, how do we manufacture some grit and some adversity here? Because out in good old Katy, you know, there's not really anything that happens. And, you know, you don't have to be, you know, you don't see too many kids fighting on the playground or kids stealing bikes. And
right.
They get, you know what I mean? Just like some of the things that I was exposed to growing up that I just thought was a normal kid thing. It's you don't see that much anymore, which, you know, again, is good in some ways. But anyway.
I'm like, go ride your bikes. Go get dirty. Go get hurt.
Yeah, I know. Oh, it's like the amount of PPE kids wear riding their bike to school drives me bonkers. I'm like, do you need elbow shin helmet that like looks like you're going to a motocross event? Like,
yeah.
What? Like,
yes.
It's sad. But anyway,
no,
I digress.
It's everywhere. And there is different kinds of human trafficking. There's also the human trafficking of, you know, the workforce of people that get called into the U.S. promising, you know, a life here that's free, and they hold their passport ransom and tell them they're working for free for, you know, however long.
Gosh, that's crazy.
It's fascinating, and it's a lot more prevalent than you think.
Well, again, I wanted to make sure I highlighted that. And so thank you for sharing that. And please, I encourage everyone listening to at least check it out. Or, I mean, at the very least, follow on LinkedIn so you can see what kind of opportunities might come up that you can help with. So getting into the core questions here, and hopefully you've had a little bit of time to think about it, but I'm going to ask the first one here is, you know, what core belief have you changed your mind over the last few years? I mean, this could be related to energy or really anything that comes to mind.
So for me, when I first jumped into this industry, I came in with a curious mind. I didn't really have necessarily a core belief because I was still trying to understand the whole vertical.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more understanding and finding people that have been in this industry for a long time of what has changed for them. What was it like 20 years ago? What was it like 30 years ago? What versus now? What happened in the last 5 years? What happened in this downturn versus the other downturn? And why do you not like wind and solar? You know, there's a lot of questions I was trying to figure out of where these gaps were. And my goal has always been is that I've seen a I have seen the possibility for a vertically integrated system in a holistic way for energy. Because I view it all as energy. All these sectors are just energy to me. They're all ways to connect energy, to connect people. And so my goal has been to be a bridge between all those sectors.
Yeah.
And that's been how I've been trying to build myself into that core belief of how do you connect them.
Wow. No, that's amazing. And I think that that's partially part of my sort of mission and purpose behind the podcast is connecting people and changing the narrative of us or them to us and them. And, you know, it's ultimately with the demand for energy only increasing as economies continue to expand, the demand for energy is going to continue to evolve and increase. And therefore we need an energy, you know, we need to add to the energy mix, not necessarily take it away. And I know that's a huge debatable topic and it's unfortunate because what happens is then it just makes us more divisive, which is like super inhibitive for growth and prosperity. But ultimately it's the reality. But folks like yourself and, you know, the platform like I'm trying to build is to educate people who otherwise don't get the opportunity to sit in front of people like you and to learn and to get educated and informed on certain topics that are extremely important that ultimately, if you don't have an understanding, you don't necessarily know how to properly make, you know, at least somewhat educated decisions on whether it's, you know, policy that you may be voting for, or, you know, just at least understanding, like, if I do this, these are the outcomes, but ultimately bringing the entire industry together to say, okay, what is the North Star? In my opinion, in energy, it's like, let's reduce energy poverty. Globally, there are so many people that aren't really that concerned about emissions. They're more worried about trying to keep electricity on at the hospital so that women can have babies in controlled, safe environments. Like, there's millions. I mean, there's, I think, 800 million people don't have access to clean water.
Not more.
Right. And if not, like, access to energy and electricity. And so I think that's really important. And I'm glad that you sort of have that mindset of, you know, again, connecting people and having sort of that positive outlook to say, hey, like, let's all come together and figure this out.
But you're absolutely right. And people like yourself, that's one of the reasons why I was excited about your podcast, is that you went from a very niche spot in the industry of mud, right?
Yeah.
Yet you started to see the trickle effect and seeing the different areas of energy. But the biggest jump that you made, and that I've noticed, even you just said it, is that it's not about the United States anymore.
Right.
And it's not about your job. It's not about what do we have. It is about what is happening globally. What does the whole world need? What's the demand? Because this world's not that big anymore.
Right.
We are all globalized.
Yeah.
And COVID proved that.
Right.
And COVID flattened. It really leveled the playing field for everybody and to realize that we really are very connected more than ever before.
Yeah.
Something as easy as a germ can spread across the globe.
No
and
kidding.
Shut it down.
Yeah.
Right? So how do you spread something like energy to the globe in the same way that a germ can be spread, right? There is ways. There are ways to do it. And big companies do need incentives because they have to be profitable in order to be a company.
Right.
Right? Which is why this new bill is actually exciting that there's incentives now.
Yeah.
And they're not the normal incentives, but it's allowing companies to invest not just in the United States, but to be the ones that are headquartered here but have international presence to start hitting that global perspective.
Yeah. No, and that's a, you know, and I'd like to kind of go there next if that's cool, cuz that was something we talked about before and you really shine some really good light on how that's going to impact your business. And like I was telling you before, I've tried to read and get an understanding of this whole, you know, this inflation or the Inflation Reduction Act, but it is a lot to chew on. And unless you're a subject matter expert or someone who understands policy and all the intricacies of so many different parts of this, it's hard. But what you gave me a good suggestion, you're like, just focus on one tiny part. And I'm like, that makes sense. Like, start small and then, you know, maybe I can learn more over that. But if you could give like a very just general overview of what it means for you and your business and how it may positively impact you guys.
So it's extremely exciting. It's pivotal. It's historic for all energy. And it's extremely here in the U.S. as it's a true pivot in this industry. And it allows not just the industry, but communities to pivot as well.
Okay.
It's got the biggest thing for us is that what we are looking at is the CO2 and the hydrogen spot.
Okay.
And for our customers and potential customers, they were waiting for this to happen to really and truly prove that they're economic. For example, the $3 production tax credit for hydrogen. That is huge. And it's not just huge because it's for one particular type of hydrogen. It's saying, look, if you have a low carbon intensity, this is the scale that you get for the credit. Or the even most exciting part of that is that you can opt in to have direct pay.
Okay. And so what does that mean? Like when you say direct pay?
Where you literally get paid to do it versus having a tax credit where you can write it off.
Right. So, okay.
That's going to be a huge game changer for a lot of people. It's going to help with, it also levels kind of the playing field for the different types of hydrogen that are out there. But it also applies to hydrogen getting into being utilized into things like ammonia. And so there's going to be these different incentives for a lot of different industries that are going to partake in that. And ammonia, that's all, we could sit here and talk about that for a whole day of why that's important. Yeah. Going into the agricultural industry, going into the power industry.
Yeah.
I mean, it's huge. So then looking at the CO2 side, which you can't stack the CO2 and hydrogen. So, and I say stack because sometimes what a lot of companies will look to do and what they have done in the past is they stack the, you use solar to power your facility, right, and you make hydrogen, then that's your stack.
Right. I see.
But the CO2 side is, you know, my company, we're currently working on a large scale development for carbon capture and sequestration.
Wow.
And that just makes it, that gave it a huge launch because not only do we, before we kind of had this, had to balance it out of, well, if 45Q doesn't get expanded, you know, we're only going to make X amount per ton. But if it does get expanded, that's not really, you can't go sell something like that, right?
Yeah.
If you go somewhere and tell them that if, you don't want an if. So now it's been expanded.
Wow.
Now it's, I believe it's $85 a ton.
Okay.
Versus the 55, which is huge. Okay. And so, and then you've got people like Oxy who under that tax credit, who's going to do direct air capture.
Yeah, I saw that.
And they've got 69 units, I think, planned. They're going to get $185 a ton.
Wow.
Which is...
That changes the economics big time.
You can have fun with that math. I mean, it's only good math. It all goes up.
Yeah.
So what okay. that does, though, is that it allows companies like Oxy to invest, really, truly invest in a commercial scale.
Okay.
And then allow them to continue their operations still to make other energy.
No wonder Berkshire Hathaway is trying to buy up all of Oxy.
Yeah. Warren Buffett's, he's ready.
Yeah. Wow. To have the foresight. See, and that's really fascinating hearing that from someone like yourself. And so is this like, how have you gained knowledge in understanding this? I mean, is it just hours of research or do you have a resource that you typically go to or do you have people that help kind of do this for you or how do you, because out there, I'm sure people are like, where can I gain information? And like I said, I personally have tried to read things and I mean, I've, you know, titles don't mean anything, but I have a master's of science and even I am like confused trying to go through this stuff. So the way you've explained it, I'm quite impressed.
Oh, thanks. It definitely has been hours of research. One of my hobbies is that I love to read and I love what I do.
Yeah.
And so I just continuously try to stay in the know, but I also have resources that I try to stay as connected as possible with, you know, in my, I run into people and I always give them the time to sit down and talk to them. And you never know what they can bring to the table. And one of those was a lobbyist. Okay. And his name's Ryan Walker. Incredible guy. He has been my walking spark notes for policy. And
Yeah. That's
been absolutely incredible to have because if I have a question, he's gone through the, you know, 2,000 pages or 700 pages of whatever it might be. And which he loves to do, thankfully.
Yeah.
And he can break it down and simplify it for me. Or if I have a question of how does this relate to this or why are they bringing up this, he can go figure it out. And he comes back to me and explains it to me in layman's terms.
Understood.
It's really helpful.
Yeah, super helpful. Yeah, no, we were talking about that earlier. Just having the access to be able to synthesize things and then just read the high notes or, you know, the cliff notes. Super important. So a big shout out to Ryan there. That's, you know, I don't know how you do it, but I commend you for it. I'm sure Laura appreciates it. So you've held some, you know, really interesting positions and you've had an interesting journey, but what kind of, I mean, what made you get into, you know, working for Frio Valley and then what about what you're doing now? Like what is the why? And then sort of, you've kind of explained it, but I'm curious again, more to hear sort of, again, why you got working with them and why what you're doing excites you.
Sure. So I'm definitely, my background growing up, I was not around oil and gas. And it was my grandfather who used to tell me, as I would think, the tales of the oil fields. And he was an inventor, Aaron Phillips, back in the day.
Oh, wow.
He helped design some of the different parts of the Alaskan pipeline. And that was some of the best stories I ever heard. And he explained how back in Louisiana, he used to zip line between the derricks and all kinds of cowboy stuff that was like, that can't happen.
Right?
But then
that's awesome.
It was not too many years ago that I got on a rig and I just thought it was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen in my life. Just the amount that goes into it, into every piece of that steel that somebody has designed and somebody has perfected, and then the type of work that it takes to run it and the amount of services that it takes to actually run the entire operation and the size and magnitude of it and what's underneath. Mm. And that was just, it blew my mind and it was fascinating. Really, truly, the first thing that ever got me into drilling was that there was a drill ship that, when I was taking care of my oldest son when he was a baby, and my ex was on a ship called the Noble, I think it was the Globetrotter or something.
Okay.
And I couldn't understand how there was a hole in the middle of a ship and they could keep a straw-like deal centered and drill thousands of feet down without breaking. It just didn't make sense. And so I annoyed him enough to get him to ask the captain about a page worth of questions.
Okay.
And I got down to the point where I got the blueprints of the ship because I needed to understand it.
Wow.
And so taking that, the next step is that that took me into how do you, you know, so many people hate this industry, yet you can't replicate this. You can't have this type of energy anywhere else but with oil and gas. Hmm. Because oil and gas makes something. You can build things with it. You can, you know, taking it down to the downstream. It is an absolute inspiring story looking back at who's created all of this industry. Yeah. And it's really an art.
Yeah.
And so looking at it that way, I just wanted to find ways of how do you continue this and how do you appreciate this in also a way that allows for sustainability to happen? How do you make this sustainable?
Right.
And that was the first bit of my career. And then I got into selling wellheads and they needed a new way to sell the wellheads. And it was getting into a downturn. So I started looking at geothermal wells and how we can work in that realm of wellheads.
Wow.
Then COVID hit and I got fascinated by the European Backbone Project. And I studied that.
What is that?
That is a, so if you look that up, it is really what kicked off the hydrogen fiasco. And they laid out the infrastructure for the next, I think it was like 30 years or something. And they had it by every like 5 years of what that build out would look like for both hydrogen and CO2. And so I watched how Germany made this announcement that they went from geothermal drilling to, well, that's not creating jobs. It's not making any profits. We can't do this. And they went to hydrogen with the geothermal. And so then that led into all these different projects in Europe. Their hope is that hydrogen is going to get them away from Russia.
Oh.
And so, which is brilliant. And Canada and Germany, I think, was this week made a big deal to do hydrogen to help them get away from Russia.
Crazy. Okay.
So there's a big story there and it was fascinating to me. And then going back to the US, it was how do you apply this to our vertical?
Right.
Is it possible? And so I started consulting with some big global funds and other companies about how they can do this and how they fit into it. And I was realizing more and more that, you know, it's like going back to high school, talking to people in the oil field and talking to people on the green side. Because, you know, oil field was, I don't know what hydrogen, no, I don't know. Hydrogen goes boom, it's no, and no, those guys aren't going to want to talk to us. And, you know, I had one guy tell me, I'll never forget, he's like, I don't have a man bun. They're not going to talk to me. And I said, we could get a clip on. But it was.
We can fake it till you make it, don't worry.
Right, but they wanted to understand it. And during COVID, a lot of people, it was, you didn't have to go through five different assistants to talk to a decision maker. You could instantly go LinkedIn them. And I poured into LinkedIn and I started asking people, hey, what are you doing with your team during this disruptive time? How are you handling it? And then it was, are you guys looking at other ways to bounce back from this downturn? Like, how are you going to do that? And that led us into the transition into hydrogen, CO2. What can we do with existing wells? What can we do with storage? What can we do to really make an impact that's profitable? And hydrogen and CO2, but especially hydrogen, was that pathway.
Wow.
And so helping them understand it, but then also now I'm going to follow me here, but going to the green side at the same time, they had all these successful pilot projects and all this ESG stuff was coming out and Europe was pouring into it and they were suddenly getting all this European investment and it was, hey, expand your project, commercialize it. Here's $100 million, go. Or here's $1 billion, go. Mm. Well, they were really excited, but once they went to go try to get and win a project, they didn't have any foundational partners. So they don't have safety records. They don't have experience. They don't have knowledge of, you know what, maybe trucks aren't going to work. Maybe we need a pipeline. And they needed help finding those professionals. Mm. And so going to them and saying, hey, well, there's a whole team over here. You know, they do valves and wellheads and this and that. They would probably know how to build this. Or yeah. Here's an EPC. You don't have to necessarily go to the big guys. Like there's smaller ones too that they could go build this easily in their backyard.
Yeah.
And they're going, well, who do I talk to? And no, they don't want to talk to me. They're going to probably beat me up or, I can't get through their door. I'm like, no, their door's wide open.
Wow.
So connecting them and putting them in the same room to say, look, maybe it's to an oil gas company. This technology can fit and be utilized on one of your pads and help with X, Y, and Z and help you decarbonize this asset. It's not going to change anything that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not taking away from anything that you're doing. It's only helping you, helping your ESG, giving you that first step and really helping them take those first steps into the transition without making them feel like they're going to get shut down.
Yeah.
And the green side, it was helping them actually be successful and commercialize their projects and get a permit because they need to be paired with a foundational partner, somebody that has those 20 years of experience, somebody that has a safety record, somebody that knows how to permit something and understands the regulatory side of it. You know, that was one of the biggest things that some of these companies didn't know is they didn't know they had to talk to the fire chief for some of these permits. It's quite fascinating, and it's really exciting when you do put some, especially the engineers together, and they suddenly they go from black and white to being kids again as an engineer and going, oh my gosh, this can work.
Yeah. Huh. So where do you see the most need for whether it's expertise,
everything.
Skills?
Everything.
Yeah.
So right now, and I got caught up in a LinkedIn post recently.
<Uh-oh>.
Okay. And usually I stay away from it. But, the biggest problems right now is communication.
Yeah.
And it's finding the right professionals.
Yeah.
And the most important professionals right now are oil and gas professionals.
Hmm.
The last 5 downturns has completely dried up the oil and gas sector.
Mm-hmm.
You've got one downturn that took away the money. You got one downturn that took away the, now you got these massive age gaps. You got another one where they actually ended up having to get rid of the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
So it's your bare bones and the guys that are, you've got a huge generation that's retired or that is retiring. And those are the guys that you want because you want the guys that understand that, they might, maybe their name's Bubba and they're wearing overalls with holes in it and you don't know where, you're not going to find them on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the guy that knows that when you hear that little whistle or you feel that vibration in the ground, something's about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the guy that does not need a to-do list. He knows how the whole operation works, what the risks are, and he can see it coming.
Wow.
It's the guy that knows how to weld, but doesn't realize that he can also weld a pipeline that has hydrogen in it. You need welders. You need somebody that understands how the different types of steels and irons and alloys and metallurgy is, for the different decades of pipe that we're going to be buying up and trying to flip and see which ones can be utilized for the different new gases.
Yeah.
You need the guys that know where that pipe is because once it's abandoned, it's not really mapped anymore.
Yeah.
And then on top of it, it's looking at, the different types of slips that you could use. It's the different types of rigs out there. A lot of people are like, well, you just poke a hole in the ground and I'm sure they've got plenty of rigs. Well, what kind of rig?
Mm-hmm.
What's the top drive going to be like for that? And that's not being thought about right now.
Wow.
But having those people and having people, like the EPCs are extremely important right now.
And what is EPCs for those who don't know?
Say that again?
Well, like you mentioned EPCs, because if someone's listening and they're
engineering, procurement, construction.
Okay.
So those are basically the guys that you go to and say, I need this built and I need you to hire enough people to build it and operate it for us. And some of them operate, some of them don't. But we need this amount of skids built, or, you know, hey, this person wants an aiming system. Can you build it? Can you find it for us?
Okay.
They put all that together. They go through all the permitting. They go through the construction of it. They get it done. They're the guys that really get it done.
Yeah.
On the infrastructure side.
Gotcha. So tying it back to, I mean, you've covered a lot of ground and obviously super knowledgeable in many different spaces. Tying it back to Frio Valley Infrastructure,
yes.
Like if you were to give us the about us kind of spiel, what is Frio Valley Infrastructure?
So Frio Valley is, I'm very passionate about Frio Valley. It's definitely, it's an exciting spot because the team, there's three of us that are business partners for this, and then we're privately backed by a large private equity fund. And the three of us are a nice little trio. So we've got two guys, there's Joel and Scott, and they have 30 plus years experience in midstream. And I don't have that experience, but I'm bringing them into the energy transition side. And gotcha. So we balance each other very well. And their experience and success in midstream and storage operations, and like Scott's, he's managed hydrogen and CO2 before.
Okay.
And it's us coming together to be we are an integrated asset development company. So we are mainly, if you break it all down, we're a renewable midstream company. So we are going to be doing quite a bit on the storage side for CCS and CCUS for both underground storage as well as the transport side of it, whether that's by pipeline or the processing facilities or the barging or trucking.
Hmm.
And so we're putting the dots together for those projects. And so we're highly focused on hydrogen, CO2, and ammonia.
Wow.
And so they're major projects. They're not small. They're exciting. They span from Texas to the Northeast all the way to the other side, to the West Coast. And we're working with some of the largest companies out there that are, I mean, doing absolutely incredible things in the world.
Wow.
And are ready to go. And I think over the next 5 years, people are, right now you might not see it all, but you're going to wake up one day and go, wow, that just happened.
No kidding. So if people that are listening are somewhat interested in what you're describing, how can people that are maybe want to transition into that space, like how can they sort of essentially make a shift and get involved? I mean, is there certain resources or is there certain companies that you know are hiring or?
There are some major companies hiring right now. Two of them that I know of for sure, absolutely hiring, is Fortescue Industries and Plug Power.
Okay.
And they are moving quick. They're moving fast. They're looking for professionals that understand how to build things. They need people to understand risk. They need people to understand how much does that cost? You know, who do you talk to? Now that's where Frio again comes in, is that we come in as this midstream foundational partner to say, hey, we can build that in between for you. We can get that transported. We know how to process it. We're a fee for service company. We like to own and operate.
Yeah.
Take that liability off your hands. And really help them understand the different types of ways that you can do that. A lot of, you know, 2 years ago, people I'd be talking to that would be, it was, well, the pipe's so big. It's like, no, they're not all that big.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, and I don't mean this in a demeaning way at all, but it's getting the crayons out and saying, hey, let me show you how this works.
Mm.
And let us help you, and let us help you make this project successful and economic.
Wow.
And also, it's for me, I'm still bridging people together. If you find me and you tell me what you do, I might know of a spot immediately that you fit.
Yeah.
And it's not that I necessarily, you know, some people ask me, well, why don't you get paid for doing something like that? First of all, I don't have time to focus on that. Second of all, it's nobody can do this by themselves. And we've got to have the people that are ready to connect to the major corridors, energy corridors. And that might mean that I need to go help some welders get together or some wellhead companies get together and figure out where their place is so that in 2 years, maybe when everything's turned on, they're also ready to service that.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. It's a delicate dance. It's a big web, big spider web.
Yeah. No, it's fascinating. I mean, It's been a great conversation. I mean, I've learned a ton, and I would imagine that the listeners have found it extremely valuable. And I mean, we're already close to this hour point, so I feel like we're just kind of scratching the surface. So we'll have to, you know, maybe either Q4 or into next year, kind of do an update on all the cool stuff that you've been a part of. But one last question before we close out is one that I, you know, always kind of find interesting. But what's something about yourself that not many people know about? Do you have any kind of unique hobbies or anything that, you know, you, anything like any hidden, you know, musical instruments?
I think that you hit it earlier that I love adrenaline things such as, you know, used to fly planes.
The whole plane thing is crazy. Okay.
Well, riding horses. I mean, that's outside. Okay. That's
wow. Anything to get the blood pumping. Nice. Yeah. I like that. Okay. Well, then I have another one. I don't think you touched on this, but do you have any daily habits or routines that you stick to consistently that help contribute to your success?
There's definitely a few things that I always keep in mind or that I do. And first thing is something that I was taught early on, which is it's all about how you respond. And you can't focus on the past. You've got to move forward. You stick to what you know and you go forward. And it's respond in a way that allows you to continue to move forward. And it's not worth your time to worry about something you can't change. So then on top of that, it's, I can't remember who said it, but every morning I love to sleep in. And I'd like to have just, you know, a nice relaxing day by the pool. That would be fantastic.
Awesome. Yeah.
But I have to find a way to get up in the morning. Okay. And it was a fight for a long time of just, okay, how do people get up at 5 a.m. and actually enjoy this?
Yeah.
But I've been following this rule where it's the countdown rule. So instead of saying, all right, 1, 2, 3, I'm going to get up, you count down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you have to go.
Okay.
And for some reason, it works for me. And so I start my morning counting down like it's going to be a launch of the day, I guess.
I love
going
that.
To space.
Right? Yeah. Laura's rocket launch.
Yeah. Laura's rocket launch. Morning rocket launch.
That is hilarious. Okay. Well, hey, whatever works. Yeah.
I do that. That's my, and then I work out and I have coffee and get my kids off and try to be full mom and go straight to work mode and get going.
Well, look, I mean, I know my wife, she takes care of the kids a lot in the morning and she owns her own business. And so I commend, you know, I just actually was on Julie McLeland's podcast right before we started recording this one. And, you know, we actually got into the topic of, cause she had asked me about my wife and her story. Cause my wife went from corporate, you know, oil and gas, to then she just sacrificed and stayed home with our kids for, you know, about six years. And then launched her commercial real estate company. And yeah, just kind of going through that is just like so commendable for women that, you know, or, you know, go from being at home and or like raising kids and it's the hardest job. And then to go out and still have a career and a business and everything else. It's, I couldn't imagine. So yeah, I commend you for going from mom mode to work mode. And
it takes a lot, but it does take a strong support. And I've got a great man that he supports me.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah.
You know, I'm sure that's what you are for your wife. And that's what keeps you sane because you're like, okay, like I was saying earlier, I got a foundation.
Yeah. It starts
it's gonna be okay.
Yeah. It starts at home. And then one thing that I've recognized over time is a lot of the most high performing people who had a high degree of happiness, which I think ultimately is the goal, right? It's like, do what makes you happy and do more of that. But in order to do that, you do need a support system at home. And so it all starts at home. And so I couldn't agree with you more. Is this having like my wife has always supported me through traveling. I mean, we've been together since I was 17 or 18. Yeah, like going from, you know, moving and being in the working in the field, and she's always been there. And then, you know, when she essentially was like, you know what, like I think I found my purpose and my path and what I want to do, I was like, hell yeah, like anything I can do to support it. Yeah. So then she went and she's got her business. And so now we're trying to juggle, you know, because I travel a lot now. And so we're really like, our calendar is very tight knit, right?
Hard, which, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And so, you know, and my son, he's only in school 3 days or preschool 3 days a week. And so Tuesdays and Thursdays, she's home with him. And I know deep down, she'd rather be wheeling and dealing and, you know, doing what she loves on the business side, but she's blocked off her calendars Tuesdays and Thursdays to spend time with our son. And I mean, I just can't thank her enough for that. So anyway, I can identify and I respect the living shit out of moms who are very career driven, but can balance that out. It's amazing.
It's a really hard balance. And if you're succeeding in one spot, you're most likely not doing too hot in the other spot, but
on a macro level, it's fantastic. Yeah. And that's the thing is like, I tell my wife, like, don't be hard on yourself. Like, don't look at one day as like, oh, I didn't get enough done for my business. Like it was a fail. Like on a macro level, like over the course of a year, like look how much you've accomplished. And it's like, holy shit, yeah, just because I didn't knock out all this work in today doesn't mean... You
should frame that for all working moms because we're always so focused on the daily because your kids are right in your face, right? Like, I need this today.
Yeah.
And you're focused on your to-do list. And so it is hard to sometimes remember what have you accomplished.
Yeah. And that's always tell her, like, from the day you started till now, look what you've been able to accomplish. And then it kind of, it gives her a bit of perspective to think, wow, okay, today wasn't all that bad. Yeah. And just, you know, just chip away, chip away, chip away. And eventually you look back and it's like, holy shit, look what we've done. So, which I'd imagine if you did that, you'd be eye opening. So, but anyway, this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can people reach out or get to know more about either you or what you're doing on the career side?
Sure. Definitely LinkedIn. You can message me and just ask for my number immediately. Okay. So I can follow up with you because sometimes for some reason, LinkedIn messages get crazy.
I get
it. But it's, you know, I'm pretty easy to get in touch with if you find me again on LinkedIn or you can email me. You can send my email out if you'd like. And
sure. I'll put the link in the show notes. So your LinkedIn link. And just then that way, that'll be the easiest. I'll put your website's link on there as well. The Red M link and any other link that you want me to include in the show notes, I'll put in there.
Well, I think too, on an end note, it's if I could tell people anything, it's you've got to understand your value. And you're a lot more important than you think you are, especially in this workforce.
Yeah.
I don't care what you do, if you're a floor hand or if you're, you know, a top executive. There is a spot for you in this transition that is desperately needed, whether that's in another oil and gas company or a transitional company, or if it's in an insurance company trying to get into this.
No kidding.
It's a huge push globally, and it's like what you said, it's no longer about the U.S., it's about the world.
Yeah.
And if you're a woman in this industry, which that's a whole nother topic, it's, you know, everybody puts on their pants the same way.
Yeah.
They might not wear dresses, but that's where you come in and play.
Yeah. No, that's a great way to close out. So thanks again for coming on the show. And for the listeners, I just want to remind you, you know, please reach out if you'd like to sponsor the show. And until next time, always remember, everyone deserves access to energy and we is greater than me. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks again for listening to another episode of Wicked Energy with JG. And look, if you or your organization wants to start a podcast, please visit my website and sign up for a free guide on how to start a successful podcast. Once you get through it, let me know if you have any questions or in getting started. Thanks, and we'll see you next week. Peace.